Here we go.
Welcome to the Citizens for Health radio show on Building Fortunes Radio with your hosts, Jim Turner and Peter Mingles. Make sure you check us out by clicking on the Citizens for Health radio show link on buildingfortunesradio.com. That's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. Citizens for Health provides over 100,000 supporters with consumer news, action alerts, and opportunities to take action. For nearly two decades, Citizens for Health has been a nonprofit pioneer in the natural health freedom movement. The Citizens for Health Education Foundation offers tools to inform the public of health issues and educate and influence policymakers. Jim Turner is here to spread the word about some of the most interesting topics that can affect your world, from the dangers of mislabeled or dangerous products to the questions and concerns of vaccines. You'll want to listen to Jim as he speaks on behalf of Citizens for Health. And now, on to our show with Jim Turner and Peter Mingles. Take it away, Peter.
Hello, everyone. Peter Mingles here. You're listening to us on Building Fortunes Radio. It's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. For anybody that might be slightly unfamiliar with my voice, my name is Peter Mingles. We started this whole thing way back at the beginning of 2013, tail end of 2012, and I wanted to have a voice to be able to speak, you know, the things that I think needed to be spoken, and some of them, of course, I thought would be somewhat controversial, and that would be okay for me because I think controversy is kind of like the way you set a lot of things out, and one of the smartest things I've ever done, so I'm going to pat myself on the back on my own radio show, is I invited Jim Turner to be a guest host on Building Fortunes Radio. Jim runs an organization called Citizens for Health. Citizens.org is his website. Sign up for the newsletter if you go to Citizens, CITIZENS.org. You can sign up for the newsletter. If you're in front of a computer, you could do that while you're here. You can get all the action alerts. But again, patting myself on the back in Rush Limbaugh style, if you will, was the idea that I was smart enough to recognize that Jim was a really smart attorney. He's over in Washington, D.C., been an attorney for many years and was a really bright guy. And when he said yes to be able to host some of these radio shows, I have learned so much. I'll share with you. He's polished me up. He's, you know, dulled some of the hard points on me, sharpened some of the things that are supposed to be sharpened, done a lot of really great things as far as educating not only me but our Building Fortunes radio listening audience on a lot of things. And I'm looking forward to today where I don't think I'd really have the same ability to sling some sentences together prior to Jim Turner as we have with Jim Turner. So it is always my great pleasure to introduce a wonderful attorney and a nice friend of ours over on Building Fortunes Radio, Mr. Jim Turner. So, Jim, thanks for being here on your own radio show.
Oh, hi, Peter. Thank you for having me. I always like being here. And what are we going to talk about this morning?
Well, the one thing that kind of hit me today specifically was I was watching some YouTube channels as a big fan of like information. So I'm an information sponge, probably a little bit more of an addict, if you will, as far as information is concerned. And somehow or another, my feed from autoplay on YouTube wound up on NBC, the regular broadcast station. And I watched like the morning show, if you will, and they were talking about what was going on in Texas, which is super-duper intriguing, and then also what was going on with vaccines. And what I found fascinating was in relationship to the vaccine discussion, they were using terms like, you got to get the vaccine. And there were lots of doctors that were really smart, and there was lots of laughter going on, and there was a joyous occasion talking about this wonderful vaccine, almost as if they were celebrating the idea of getting this jab, and they were talking about some of the challenges because of Texas. I think it was not a Texas station, but they were focusing on Texas, on how that second dose wasn't going to be done on time, and medical doctors have said, that's totally okay. Don't worry about that. 27 days. It doesn't matter. You missed your appointment. Come in next week. And all of that sort of stuff is being made for people that are going to decide they're going to jab themselves. And they just started some trials for pregnant women, which is always like a warning. Like, I always see that one's like a given. If you're doing warnings for stuff, you always put on pregnant women. Certainly up there, you know, moving, heavy-duty equipment and pregnant women usually in the same thing. And I just said, what are they, oh, my gosh, they're encouraging people, pregnant women, to get vaccinated, and there's been no real trials, and they're just starting them now, and the doctors with unbelievable confidence and super smartness and degrees behind their backs as they're being filmed in their offices, how brilliant they are and smart they sound. They say, well, you could just make your own, you know, really the woman has to talk to her doctor and make her own decision. And I'm saying to myself, what decision? You're not even saying which vaccine. We're talking about schedules that are being messed up because of weather. We're talking about delays in shipments. We're talking about a whole bunch of things. This is crazy, and all you people are smiling. So I just figured that would be a really great way to kind of kick off two things, Texas and the vaccines. And I'm going to just throw in one thing before I'm going to stop my little rant. I always remembered that when I was a young kid, and even still today, when I would go to the supermarket, I would look at the magazine stand, and I would look at the National Enquirer or the Sun Enquirer or whatever the hell it was, and I always knew those were crazy magazines because you saw a picture of that space alien with that big green bulbous head, so you'd realize that the story about Princess Diana and space aliens and anything else in there was probably somewhat crazy. Maybe there's a hint of truth maybe in the National Enquirer, but sometimes those things were just crazy. And then, just so you know, for those people that are wondering, in the COVID bill, they actually put the release of declassified information about space aliens. So I don't know, Jim, if that's like a subtle clue or not, but it's crazy out there. So I'll let you kind of straighten me out.
Well, it is crazy just in general. First of all, from the Citizens for Health point of view, we're very distressed that there are people who want to be vaccinated and there are vaccine doses that are being held in hospitals and other places that can't be released to people who want vaccine. You want the shot. That's we think that's in our basis. We believe that the individual consumer's right to choice is dominant. And here there are people who want the vaccine and they can't get it, or a vaccine, or they want something and they can't get a shot. And then there are, at the same time in the same city, there are doses that are being held back for reasons that are unexplainable. On the other hand, there's a pressure in the direction of trying to hem people in so that they have to be vaccinated. We vigorously argue that anybody who wants to be vaccinated should be allowed to be vaccinated and should have access, and they shouldn't be blocked. And anybody who doesn't want to be vaccinated should not have to be vaccinated. And the only time they must be vaccinated is after it's gone through the legal process that examines what's supposed to be done when a fundamental human right is drawn into question. And that is the issue why they want to vaccinate important enough that the state should override the rights of the individual? Secondly, is the way the state wants to overwrite those rights a workable way of addressing the problem it's trying to address? And finally, is there any, is it the least intrusive way of addressing that problem? And but in that context, everybody should have the right to say, I want to be vaccinated and get the vaccinations that are there, or I don't want to be vaccinated and have the right to avoid that. And then if the community needs to have some kind of more intrusive activity, it should be done through the process of making an analysis of what fundamental human rights are being violated and on what grounds they should be allowed to be violated. That's all in the law. It's there. Properly handled, this entire vaccine COVID-19 situation could have been managed carefully, as were three other intrusions of viruses country between 2010 and 2020 that were handled effectively. They came in, they had some small outbreaks, they were contained, and people that wanted to get whatever they needed to get got it, and the people who didn't, and we had some fluffles and truffles, and it was a difficulty and problematic and scary, but handled. In this situation, we got trapped into an all-or-nothing kind of response in which we have always vaccinate and never vaccinate people fighting with each other and trying to drag the public onto one side or the other of that debate. And we're very concerned at Citizens for Health that people have the right to make their own choices. And the constant debating that's underway right now is making that harder and harder. So they are saying, yes, you have the right to choose, and the information available to make those choices is actually not being very widely spread. We know, for example, I'm sure that probably the vast majority of Americans have heard Dr. Fauci say you should get the vaccine. And on the other hand, probably a much smaller number has heard him say he takes vitamin A, vitamin C, and vitamin D every day. In fact, we think from Citizens for Health point of view that whether you vaccinate or not, taking vitamin C and D is a very important aspect of moving forward in your own health. And that brings me to a fundamental idea, and it's an old American idea. It was written up in an essay by Emerson way back in the 1830s called self-reliance. We need to learn for ourselves, for our own well-being, for our own navigation through the problems that exist in our current world, we need to learn how to engage our own self-reliance. Now, we can't engage our own self-reliance in the sense of being able to navigate through, say, something like the Texas weather problems. We have to rely on a whole bunch of people. But we can learn what we have as options or choices. And there's information that ferret it out and burrow down, you'll find guidances to tell you. One of the issues that we are concerned about is that the way the vaccines are talked about, it's as if every vaccine that's out there affects all people in the same way, presented in the media. In fact, biochemical individuality means individuals are very likely to respond differently. And some people might very well be helped, and other people might very well be harmed. That is something the individual person needs to figure out and learn about, and that's why, you know, you have what they call learned intermediaries. That's your healthcare professional who you talk to, and you say, you know, I've been coming to you for the last 1 year, 10 years, whatever, and my health profile. And then you can ask questions like, you know, should I get any vaccine? There are people out there who should not be getting vaccines, and they, you know, the established order of science and policy are saying, if you're allergic to the vaccine components, don't take the vaccine. So then what are the components? Well, you know, the vaccine has two meanings. One is the active ingredient that's supposed to help you in some way protect against the thing that's causing the problem. But then there are all the other additional things that come in the product that's injected into your arm. And some of those things people are allergic to. Some of those things are problematic. Some of them may be problematic to a large number of people. When we were vaccinating our children, we got a very good pediatrician here in Washington. It was 1970. And it was between 68 and 73. And we had a very good pediatrician, and we walked very carefully through the various vaccines. There were only about six at that point, six or eight. And we walked through them very, very carefully. We were able to get, for example, a particular measles vaccine that was not grown in monkey cells. We got a diphtheria, DPT. We got the D and the T. We didn't get the P. We avoided the P because it was a very serious problem at that point, and so forth. And we did that through each of the vaccines. And we made our choices, and we did that by doing research and looking at them and understanding the distinctions and knowing how to make choices. And our choices were for us. I'm not saying that our choices are choices everybody should make. They should do the same kind of thing. So right now, it's really important for the public to understand that the media is a very, very superficial, very, very quick and dirty presentation of a subject matter. The primary thing you learn by the media is what it is that they are saying that will sell advertising for the people who advertise on the media. And there are many different ways of doing that. I grew up in a household where my father was a newspaper man, and I read the newspaper every day. I delivered the newspaper as a newspaper newsboy. I read the paper every day, and then he would come home from work and tell me what the real news was. And that real news was all the things that were kept out of the newspaper. For example, in those days, it was the 50s, in those days, newspapers did not print things that were critical of smoking. I mean, it flat out didn't do it. And they were instructed, don't let anything critical of smoking get into the newspaper. And whenever he was sitting in what they called the slot and reviewing news stories that came along, he'd always let the anti-cigarette stuff go through. His boss never bothered him about it. Probably he was in on the joke as well, or in on the rebellion as well. But in any case, every 6 days, there was a 6 day paper, it was a daily paper. Every sixth day, he'd be in the slot, and if a anti-tobacco story came along, said tobacco cigarettes can cause harm, it would get in the paper. And that happened, probably once a quarter or once every 2 months. So there's a little tiny little trickle. But when he came home, he would tell us, so-and-so's kids got arrested, but that was kept out of the paper because they had a good PR guy or whatever. So right now what you've got is a huge, huge PR machine behind whatever's coming out on the virus and, on COVID-19 and whatever we're doing about it. And that's not intrinsically a bad thing. It's just you need to know that's what's happening. You need to understand. You only get the headlines, even when you have a three-minute story on TV, it's only the headlines. You got to go dig stuff up. And we're very fortunate now that we've got these massive information tools, and you can go read all kinds of stuff out there. And, you need to decide how important is it for me to do the research and do the looking, and who do I rely on? Do I rely on my doctors? Do I rely on certain groups? We try at Citizens for Health to give a broad range of information that might be useful. But every individual in this situation is on their own making their own decisions. And that's what's going on with the COVID-19 vaccine virus worldwide pandemic problem. And it ranges all the way from people saying this isn't really a problem to people saying it's the most important thing that's ever happened health-wise, people saying that the vaccines are a complete disaster, over to without them we're all going to be wiped out. And that's all out there, all being discussed. And as a personal individual using self-reliance, you have to navigate your way through it. And you can decide, do I believe this person or this group or this profession or don't I? Or do I believe some of it or not, or only some of it? I do believe none of it. And you could be on both sides. You could believe nothing that an anti-vaxxer says, or you could believe everything that an anti-vaxxer says, or somewhere in between. And a pro-vaxxer would be the same. You could believe everything they say, or nothing they say, or some of it. What we think, in terms of the way we analyze things, it's a matrix. And you got people who are all over the place. You got people who believe that these things are either zero valuable to 100% valuable, and they're somewhere on that line, zero to 100. And you have people who say they want to take it zero to 100. And there are people who don't really believe much but will take the vaccine because that's how they make their decisions. And our point is very simple. We believe the best decisions for the community are the results of each individual making the best decisions for their own health. And if they do that and it's structured properly, we will work our way through this whole crisis and come out the other end stronger and healthier for it. So that's my take on the vaccine issue, and I read the stuff, I look at it, and there's a lot of fascinating information, a lot of things that we're learning, and I think we're going to learn a lot more stuff. I went through this back in the 1970s when the swine flu activity occurred. We were doing a project that I started when I was working with Ralph Nader and continued through 1980 on vaccine regulation in the United States, and it was a mess. It was just a horrible mess, and it got moved from NIH over to FDA. We got the Justice Department to say that NIH was violating the Food and Drug Law. I mean, when I say we got them, do we ask them, are they doing the Food and Drug Law properly? No, the Justice Department said. We had Senate hearings. Senate hearings said, no, it's not being done right. Got moved over to FDA, and FDA began regulating it, and then they came up with the idea of doing the swine flu program, and they said they were going to inoculate 200 million people. They got to 49 million, and so many people were getting sick from the vaccine that they withdrew the idea. I have no idea what's going to happen on COVID-19, and we'll see. We'll see how it unfolds. But we are in a situation where COVID-19 is the fourth or so of these kinds of viruses or agents to hit the country. There will be many more. We're seeing them already, which are the derivatives of COVID-19. There are many more. Merck has dropped trying to do a vaccine because they appears that they feel nervous that they aren't going to be able to do a vaccine. There are 3,200 or so of these viruses in bats alone. There are many other species have similar agents. This is a big, 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 big world. And navigating through it, lots of people are going to have to get pretty educated. And so anyhow, I think it's important just to know that's where we are, and we need to use our own innate capabilities to navigate here.
Great information. So do you have any thoughts about what's going on with relative to Texas? I guess that would be something I did not know. I'll just kind of throw my own thing out there. I knew it was really cold. I grew up in New York and Chicago, so I knew what really cold meant and what that really meant. I did not know that it would have such an impact on the energy grid over in Texas, and I also didn't know, because I don't live in Texas. I know a lot of people live in Texas already know this stuff, so for them it's not new news. They probably deal with this in the headlines every day, that Texas is almost like its own little country when it comes to its power grid. They kind of decided a long time ago that they wanted to do their own thing. And with wind turbines and natural gas and everything other than coal and whatever, oil, they found themselves in a little bit of a quandary here because it got super-duper cold in Texas. So do you have any comments on that?
Well, I think Texas made a huge mistake. And, I mean, that's the way it looks to me in looking at it. The basic premise of Citizens for Health is that the decisions on health lie in the hands of the individual consumer, and that the collective decisions of individual consumers are the best way to learn what the best social health outcomes are. Same thing's true for energy. And Enron dropped into the framework in the 90s and started making the argument that we will create a unregulated or minimally regulated energy system, and that will allow us to have lower prices for consumers, and we'll be able to deliver better services. That's what they said. And a lot of people bought into that. California bought into it for a while, and I think some of the northeastern states bought into it, and Texas bought into it big time. And around 2000, maybe a little after 2000, somewhere in that period, Texas decided to deregulate its energy system. So we have three energy grids in the U.S. One is east of the Mississippi, one is west. They're connected by some interconnections. And then there's Texas. And it's not all of Texas, by the way. It's about 90% of Texas. And fascinatingly enough, a city like El Paso, which is not in the Texas grid, isn't having these problems that they're having in the rest of Texas. And what happened is, frequently, they got into a situation where the competition for energy services, there are dozens and dozens of companies in the free market there supplying energy to consumers. And they almost always, when you get marketing leading a company, then they sell lower price. That's what they do. And they go out and they get people and say, we charge you less, we charge you less, we charge you less. And then people buy into charging you less. Unfortunately, a systematic program in which you charge less continuously creates a situation where you don't have the resources to actually maintain your system. And so what they did is systematically underinvest in making the system resilient. So they did not weatherize aspects of their system, which turned out to come back and bite them. For example, natural gas, in the natural gas process, the natural gas pipelines freeze. That was not figured into the process. But I think right now what I've been reading is about 85% of the natural gas supply in Texas has been frozen in their delivery system. And that's a core part of why the whole thing is falling apart. It is true that the windmills, to some extent, also, some of the windmills also were subject to the same kind of under protection, so they weren't weatherized. But they only provide about 7% of the electricity of the power in Texas during a winter period. So the real issue is this natural gas stuff. And then, for whatever reason, which is completely unclear to me, the political leaders of Texas, rather than point out the problem and try to work on it, have been going around and making it be a political issue, saying it's green energy that killed Texas. But the opposite seems to be true. I mean, I don't know if you count natural gas as part of the green energy movement or not. I mean, they have a big debate about that. A lot of natural gas guys want to say, well, natural gas is really good, but a lot of environmentalists say, well, it's just further fossil fuel. And so that debate's going on. Clearly, you cannot argue that natural gas as a green energy is the thing that caused the problem, and therefore green energy is bad. I mean, you can't say natural gas and some environmentalists like natural gas, and therefore when natural gas went down, it's the windmill's fault. I mean, you just can't say that, but that's what they're saying in the Texas political leadership. I heard some people who were not Republicans, not leaders of Texas in the administrative side, but on the legislative side, and they're Democrats, and saying, we all screwed up. When we deregulated electrical markets in Texas in around 2000, when we did that, that was a big mistake. And we are as culpable as leaders as anyone, and we should all roll up our sleeves now and figure out how to get out of this. Enron had gone through this already in California, the California recall on the governor there when Gray Davis was recalled and Arnold Schwarzenegger was elected governor. When that happened, it was part of this deregulation of energy that caused it, because they were deregulating energy. And we were spending quite a bit of time in California at that time, and the brownouts were pretty common. I mean, you know what they call them, brownouts. And that was one of the things that created the political situation that caused the governor then to be recalled. The problem, and I think there's an object lesson here for us, even with regard to COVID-19, these complicated, integrated, highly interdependent systems are vulnerable to various kinds of breakdown that are relatively minor in themselves, but cause the entire system to fall apart. So what we've got here with Texas, we've got a cold snap. Yeah, it's a huge cold snap, bigger than anything that's happened for a long time. But they had not prepared for a serious cold problem in the energy field. The same is happening with regard to COVID-19. COVID-19, whatever it is obviously very dangerous, obviously some kind of a problem. When I say very dangerous, there are a lot of people getting really sick. It's dangerous. I mean, there's something bad going on. We are not at all clear what it is or where it came from or how it happened, but we do know that it completely taxed almost every one of our complex systems. It doesn't matter whether it's the healthcare system. The healthcare system has been taxed to the nth degree. The education system has been taxed. The small business system has been taxed. The economy has been taxed. I mean, it's all the entire interconnected complexities of our system are under assault by whatever the COVID-19 causal agent is, if there is such a thing. It may be a multiplicity of causes. It may not be just one thing. So what I'm saying is, what we see with COVID-19 and what we see with Texas and the cold are two examples of the very same thing. Complex systems being put under assault by some kind of an event, a natural event that is causing things to unravel. And we are going to see it again with 5G. 5G is out there and they're trying to sell it. They're selling it like crazy on TV. That's another thing. If you're, if you want to be armed to get yourself through the world, when you see something being really, really heavily advertised, you know, like drugs on TV or 5G on TV, or cheap energy on TV, get really cautious. Put up all of your shields up and start saying, whoa, wait a minute, why do they have to be selling this to me? If it's so good, how come people aren't finding it like through their doctors through their the way that they do their phone service? Why do they have to sell it to us? Like, why do they have to give the two for the price of one? Why do they have to have a lower price? When they're starting to talk to you like that, look behind it and say, what's going on here? And basically, in all these instances, you have one or two or three major economic, concentrated economic interests that are driving the actual activity. And then the policy is organized around that. The basic question being, how do we interface with these huge economic powers? Now, you know, something like Amazon or Google, huge powers that have intruded themselves directly into our lives with providing tremendous benefits and raising huge questions about our own autonomy and our ability to function. We need to learn how to make choices in the ever-increasingly complex world that we're in, without being trapped into making some kind of a decision that is unhealthy for ourselves, unhealthy in, you know, physical sense and emotional sense, spiritual sense. There's a lot of potential to step in the wrong hole and break your leg in a society that has all these interconnected complex systems that are in the control of a, you know, probably not even in the control, but are managed by a very small group of people who make decisions on behalf of all of us. And they're, by the way, in these institutions, not elected. Oh, and by the way, avoid...
You've been listening to Building Fortunes Radio on buildingfortunesradio.com. Thanks for listening. Be sure to check us out every Friday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time for the designated Building Fortunes Radio segment with Peter Mingle. Be sure to check out the buildingfortunesradio.com website for our featured segments. It's been our privilege to have you listen in. At Building Fortunes Radio, we wish you the success you deserve and are willing to work for. So spread the word, tell a friend, join our newsletter, and go make a difference in your world.